Hey folks, welcome to Your Basket is Empty. We're a digital commerce consultancy and we help consumer brands navigating 5 to 50 million in revenue make better commercial decisions. We do this by evaluating people, process, technology, and customer experience to produce a digital roadmap which is delivered and managed by us, a founder-led team of senior digital commerce experts. We also produce content with the aim of informing, inspiring, and entertaining the modern commerce community. We do that with a newsletter, events, and this podcast you're listening to. I'd highly recommend you go and check us out at yourbasketisempty.com. On this episode, we're discussing the intersection of content and commerce with Magnus Hilstad, co-founder and CEO at Sanity. We discuss what structured content is and why it's important, how much airtime AI should be given when it comes to content, the differences commerce, media, and tech companies take when approaching content, what it's like to work with Morning Brew, one of my big inspirations, and where content and commerce will be in 5 years. Before we get into it, it's no surprise that I'm a big fan of Centra. I've been following their journey for some time, and it's a pleasure to be working with them on the podcast and the newsletter. But who is Centra? Centra is the only direct consumer and wholesale commerce platform designed exclusively for fashion brands. Icons like Paul Smith, Our Legacy, Nudie Jeans, Reigns, Sandquist, Ellis Brigham, and Luca Filoni trust Centra to help them scale rapidly, globally, and across their online and offline channels. What are some things that I really rate? Complete front-end design freedom, the ability to sell in every market instantly with their out-of-the-box localization capabilities, minimal manual work and no sneaky fees, a B2B engine, an online wholesale showroom that buyers love to use, and OMS capabilities to enable advanced fulfillment flows, omnichannel initiatives that enhance the customer experience and ensure your online and brick-and-mortar operations work together. So take your fashion brand global, faster, further, stronger today with Centra. Want to learn more? Head to centra.com/yourbasketisempty. Enjoy the episode. Magnus, welcome to the pod. How are you and where are you?
Thank you for having me. I'm in San Francisco and I'm great.
Nice. So this discussion, we're going to explore the intersection of content and commerce. I don't think there's anyone better qualified to do that. However, I like to start with a bit of a rewind in these instances. So as a bit of a primer, I'm curious, you're not the first person that's come from this world, but what led to consulting, to PE, to starting your own company? Give me a little flavor of the journey.
Yeah, I'm definitely not the first. I have 12 years of experience within finance and consulting. And then I felt they were not really spending enough time understanding the value of companies. So then I started working for EQT Partners and a private equity firm in Sweden. And that was great. And I was there for a long time. But still, private equity sits on the board. They don't run the company. I had a fantastic time there. At the same time, I started learning to code back in 2000. I was asking someone what a neural network was. They said it's a black box. And I was wearing a tie and kind of, you know, finance back then.
Yeah.
I was like, come on, I'm not stupid. Tell me, it's not a black box. Like, what is it? And no, it's a black box. And that provoked me. So I went home and I started Googling a little bit about neural nets. I had one friend who was kind of into it. And then I found how to write a neural network with 10 lines of Python. And then one thing led to the other. And then I was spending my nights, and private equity is supposed to work at night as well. And I was spending the time building neural networks and showing my wife, like, look at this amazing thing. I can detect a cat in an image. And of course, it doesn't show a cat image, but it was a lot of fun. And then, of course, I realized that what we were about to see was another inflection point as big as the Industrial Revolution. And private equity was a lot of fun, but I was working with retail companies, oil service companies, I was working with truck engine cooling companies. That's not where you'll see kind of the early signs of the inflection point. So I thought I wanted to expand and see new things. So I left EQT and I was sitting in my attic and coding. I told my wife, 2 years, I'm going to be without a job. And if I haven't started something by then, okay, I'll take a job again. And then I met my co-founders, and they basically were already running their agency for 20 years. It was first film, and then some WAP games when that started to become popular in Norway. It never went above 10. I think at one point down to 15 people, too much. I went down a bit, back down again to 10, kept it smaller. So I started hanging out. We were introduced by some common friends, and I thought the idea that they were onto, and they already built the first kind of 0-to-1 of Sanity. When I met my co-founders, this was before we knew about headless CMS. It wasn't really a thing, or maybe it was a thing, but not in our world. But the idea they had was, if you treat content as data, if you enable people to parse content instead of it being a pile of Word documents, if you enable people to start to encode business logic into the content model, into the workflows, that would be extremely powerful. And I immediately saw that from my background, the way you could drive business with that kind of logic. And I started to spend time with them. And originally, I was just going to help them out as a free advisor. And then it took a couple of weeks, and we realized that we should do this together and shut down the agency and start a software company and do this full time. A couple of us had to move to the US. Let's make it big or fail miserably. We got an email from Restaurant Brands International. Never heard of it. Realized that was the parent company of Burger King, Popeyes, and Tim Hortons. And so show that they have been looking for a year for something like this, a platform like this. The soon-to-be CTO kind of started using Sanity. They actually use Sanity for their apps, their website, and the in-store ordering kiosk, but also to desk the menu combos that goes into the point-of-sale system. So that was really the start. And this is now 6 years ago. We've been working with them since.
Yeah, nice. So I'm curious then, it's a really interesting genesis to this journey. So my sense is the world is becoming more and more democratized from a digitization perspective, right? Shopify being a good example, right? From a commerce perspective, right? Democratized commerce. But I think the downside of that is there's a lot of competition. So therefore, content in my mind is probably a differentiator. Now, one could argue ChatGPT and AI is now democratizing content. Let's park that for the moment. We'll come back to that. But do you think, therefore, thinking about the way in which Sanity works, is it now the right time for people to rethink the way in which they manage content? Is that going to be a differentiator?
Yes, absolutely. And I think this stuff has not yet crossed the chasm. So first we had all these websites that were encoded in HTML. The text was inside. And if you go back, we had hilarious fonts and images, and it was all marketing at best, right? Some started e-commerce, Amazon, etc., but most companies were just marketing. Then we had this period that I call the omnichannel era, where everybody was building a store on top, a digital store. And I saw that we bought a sporting goods retailer back in 2010, XXL, and built that to be the largest in the Nordic. Great company. And they thought of the online store as one out of their 10 stores or something. Eventually, we had it up to 20, 30 stores. Instead of thinking about it as half of the business. And you had this mindset is that you just patch some digital on top of your existing business, and then off you go. And I think all the systems that were built in that period were kind of also reflecting that a bit. Like, let's also have an e-commerce communication channel. Oh, let's also have an app past 2007, 2010, when that really started to accelerate. And when people said omni-channel, that was like best case some combination on the order side that combined those two systems. But the content was living completely siloed. And I think it made it extremely hard. These are difficult to use software, but it was actually development on the front end side that would start sparking this. Because what really happened and what Headless really is a reaction to the trend that everybody wanted to start to build JavaScript sites. And JavaScript frameworks are free and open for all. They are relatively easy to use. I'm a very noob developer. But you could build websites and they could be amazing. And of course, you always could have done that in simpler software where you point and click your ways to it. But now that code was easy to use and you needed some system to enable that to be powered. So instead of having a CMS then where that has the templating, building the website inside the CMS, you have to take that away, use an API from the system that holds the content because the JavaScript code doesn't hold your content. And then send it over there, hence the term headless CMS. Excellent innovation to make it more efficient, make it better. But it wasn't an innovation on the content side. What you're really doing now is that we're trying to make that same revolution happen on the backend side. So to give developers superpowers, because the same way you wanted to encode a very beautiful digital experience for your customers, you need to encode that business logic and that experience for your in-house people who are dealing with your brand, your IP, your presence in the market, and enabling them to give a better experience. Now, is this democratizing? I guess WordPress did a good job at democratizing websites, and I don't think anyone has contributed with new technology better than Matt did from 2006 or when he started. But what I do think is that this whole digitalization trend that especially we're talking about consultants have spoken about for what, 15 years, 20 years, now it's starting to happen. And yes, that is being democratized. It doesn't have to be as complicated as it used to be. And you do not have to buy a full suite from Adobe that costs you a couple of million dollars to be able to put up a digital game that is equally good as a large company that is dealing with some of those large incumbent platforms. So I think there's a certain kind of democratization. I think the content space has always been very fragmented. I think there's always been a lot of different options that you can use. Of course, it has been dominated around WordPress and Drupal and Adobe, Epi, Sitecore, those kind of companies. But there's always been a long tail, because to build a CMS isn't necessarily that hard. It's to build a good one that scales that is hard. And that's the same reason you have a lot of companies that build their own homegrown systems. But I think what's happening now is that you're integrating that content with your business logic and other systems. This word that Gartner talks about that I like very well, composable, where you're putting together the right kind of solutions together. But more importantly, you're composing your business in a digital manner. You're putting digital at the core of the business. And then you need to connect your ERP system. You need to connect it with your distribution platform on your website and apps. Content sits and has a very natural space in the middle of that. So I would think there will be consolidation. As some players in this market get a leg up and move ahead, it'll be very hard to follow. And you can start new CMSs, but they won't be able to compete with what companies like Sanity would be able to do. And that would over time create a stronger consolidation in this market, because there's such a need for interconnectivity in your stack.
And we're getting pretty deep into this stuff, but I think that's good given the audience. Basically, e-com nerds listen to this, so I think we're good. Can you tell me what is, for the uninitiated, structured content and why is it important in the context of our conversation?
Structured content is about separating content and design. I think that's the simplest way to put it. Like, your content shouldn't think about how it's being presented. Your content shouldn't be aware of where it will be used, because then it's single use case. So if your content is structured, you're able to reference it from a single source of truth. You're able to distribute it to many different use cases. That also means that you're able to parse it, especially when done right. That also means that you could do a lot of things programmatically with your content. You can start automating the workflows. Mm-hmm. And this was very good even before we started having all these LLMs that enabled us to work with content. And of course, LLMs are great at looking at unstructured data, but they are, of course, terrible at giving you a predictable outcome. So you need a lot of metadata to enable that to happen. And if you have a base of content that is structured, it's much easier. A good example on structured content and the reusability, I always think, is a map. Like, on the end website, you should do it. But in a CMS, you should have a geolocation and a suit.
Yep.
Then it could be rendered anywhere, because by definition, a map changes, street names change, things happen. So if you just give a geolocation and a zoom, then you have the data there to render a map. That is structured content. A map is a snapshot of something.
Yeah, that's a great analogy. I'm keen to change gears slightly and just look a little bit more at what Sanity's customer base looks like. So my sense is the persona that you guys deal with is a CTO, but I also think maybe you deal with a number of different people at a brand. Yeah. We'll get onto some of your verticals, because I know you guys work in media and other verticals as well. But like, from the commerce perspective, who is it that you deal with? Is it CTOs? Is it creative people? Is it all of the above?
Yeah, so all of the above touch our software in various different shapes. The buyer are very often the technical organization. Sometimes there's a technical organization sitting in the e-commerce organization, depending on how you're structuring it. But typically, someone who has an architectural understanding of what they're trying to achieve. So e-commerce is about a third of our business. We work with companies like Skims, Arc'teryx, Puma, Sonos.
Well, you're pretty much describing my entire wardrobe and household appliances.
Yeah, so exactly. Yeah, no, very. But do you have Tecovas boots though? I just got my Tecovas boots because I was meeting the CTO down in Austin. So
yeah, nice,
so I bought a pair. They are also on Sanity. Majuri is moving over to Sanity now. There's a lot of them. In those companies, they often have rather like VPs of digital or VP of e-commerce or some title like that. Those companies who have CTO, Tecovas has a great CTO, Kevin, often are somewhat more technical, but not necessarily. They could also be more merchandising kind of titles on them. But they understand technology. They understand what they want to do for the business, not just technology for the sake of the technology. I love commerce because people are willing to test. And the response time they have from their audience is often quite fast. And we were surprised to see, now we're a partner with Shopify and we're the only Plus certified CMS on the Shopify platform and partnering with them on what they do. They're very willing to experiment because they see the returns. They're willing to buy software to drive that change. And they also understand the need to tell a story and be present with their customers. So that drives it. Amazing segment we're investing more in. We do a lot with technology companies. So that would be Figma, Loom, Brex, etc. We do a lot with media companies. Media is extremely interesting. I think it's a lot of people say, why do you bother that the business is out of profit? Well, they're not out of spend. And I think they need help because of all the change that is happening. We're working with Morning Brew, Semaphore, section of New York Times before they decided to shut that down. So that was sad, but hopefully we'll do more with New York Times in the future. They wanted, content is at the core of what they do, and they need to tell stories. And we enable them to do that more efficiently together with all the advances you have in the presentation technology. So that's a big one for us. But I think it's a very clear statement that we're a very horizontal platform because they all have the same problems or opportunities in creating content, a strategic asset for the business. When you can move faster to create customer experience, especially if there's a certain service element that you have and certain service you give that is digital, or if there's a certain transaction that is happening that you do that is digital, or if there is an important communication side of your business that we see in healthcare or in SaaS software, where it's less about the transaction, but more about documentation, marketing, communication, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, and it's interesting because I feel like it is an interesting mix of metadata or data behind the scenes and storytelling ultimately, right? And some of that storytelling is transactional, for commerce. And yep. Like you say, it's highly, they need to change, not necessarily their story, but they need to make the story as immersive and as exciting to the customer as they possibly can on a weekly, daily, quarterly, yearly basis. But then, yeah, it's interesting to see it powering media, which I appreciate. Media is very fragmented and it's hard to compete with the eyeballs on TikTok, if you're the New York Times, for instance, or Morning Brew. But I still think that there's an interesting... And there's still a lot of growth and room in that media area. Like you said, they still need to tell stories. There's still a lot of eyeballs with plenty of, there's plenty of money behind those eyeballs as well, that are consuming things the New York Times and Morning Brew.
There is a lot. And, one of the benefits of using content as data and using structured content for media companies, but for anyone else really, where the consumers will take us and where technology would take us in interaction, you can still use your content. You can be very fast onto that. I had this discussion with Ben Smith, the editor-in-chief at Semaphore. We were playing around with, could we build this experience where you can talk to your phone and get the news read out by the voice of the journalist? Yes, you can. The question is, when does that make sense to do it? And with a platform like Sanity that is truly structured content, everything is parsable. You could do that relatively efficiently, depending on what you have to build in the front end. But that is possible. It's a question, could you convert that with your customers so they would use it? Everybody think about content as text and images. To me, content, and maybe this shows that content is not the right word, content is a lot of metadata telling you what you're looking at when. And it's a lot of, metadata, a lot of data that isn't visible, but that shapes the context of the content that you are showing people. Who are you going to show it to? When are you going to show it? What is the relationship between the various content that isn't shown, but that shape that? And we often talk about that where businesses, they need to create a presence. And if they kind of create that presence, that there's so many channels now that you're bombarding customers with content. And it's not hard to do so. You've seen examples of LLMs that can help you spit out content in right, left, center. That used to be harder. It's not a question of whether you could do it. The question is, could you do it consistently and with one voice? And can you enable yourself to contextualize that for where your customer is, whether it's physical or in their mind space? That would drive a lot more how you stand out as a brand to your customers. And can you also get feedback loops on that? Can you listen to them so that you understand, so that they get a relationship with you? You don't just bombard them, but you actually hit them with the right information at the right time. Personalization has been a big topic for many years in this industry. I don't think people have nailed it.
It's so interesting you say that. I've been doing some work with some brands recently, and we've been thinking about the idea of AI personalization, and I'm still not quite convinced. I mean, this is a story for another time, but I feel like there's a lot of digitization that needs to happen at a basic brand before they even go anywhere near an LLM or AI. Like, there's a lot of low-hanging personalization fruit from my perspective. You know, ChatGPT exploded onto the scene a year and a half ago. The sort of dilution of Instagram had happened years ago, you know, like, so I don't think that's a new thing. But look, it's a good segue. But I'm curious, because I would imagine what you guys do is a good use case for AI. The world in which you operate in is a good use case. But one, I'm curious, how do you guys think about it internally? Is it like a big thing that you talk about? Is it in every conversation? Is it in every strategy meeting, all that sort of stuff? And then I know you've got the AI assist kind of like feature. I'd love to learn a little bit more about that. So yeah, how do you guys think about AI?
So we definitely are kind of all over it. I think it's definitely going to shape what we do, and we have it in our minds for all the things we do. It hasn't fully taken over everything we do. We have one team that focuses mostly on the AI features, which is a transitory thing because AI would be there for every feature. What we're seeing is that it could be extremely helpful to do a lot of things, and it should be baked into a lot of the features, and we are baking it into a lot of the features that we're using. A good content platform enables you to orchestrate how you should work with content, ideally with your business logic into it, build scalable processes for that. That is not where the innovation has been. There may be some LLMs who could help you build software to do that, but I think where the change is coming, we're seeing a lot of interest from customers. We're seeing certain industries are very cautious, especially those that deal with rights and more creative works. We've been using this even before the LLM took off, that we've been generating marketing materials for ourselves, etc., using AI. When it happened, we had some conversations internally that we, in the beginning, maybe were too skeptical being part of the hype, because I think a lot of the hype thing was less relevant, and we saw marketing value in being there and being clear. We were early out with the AI assist before we normally would have launched something, I think. We just did a reiteration of that now in the spring. That we're seeing good feedback on, that it helps people doing chores. What is interesting is on the customer side, we can see some customers really diving into it and other customers are being more cautious. And I think it has to do with, if you're a media company, you will be a lot more cautious. If you're a travel agency or a company that deals with travel sites, we see customers building on Sanity and ChatGPT, for instance, taking signal from the internet on where traffic is and automatically generating landing pages, or generating variations of landing pages for hotels in Berlin, that there's a certain landing page for families going to Berlin versus younger people going to Berlin looking for a party. And then you could generate automatically landing page for that. You can generate a lot more content. That isn't personalization. That is creating variants of the same, but it really drives your SEO traffic. And we see a lot of those things. We also, very interestingly, hired a data analyst for our demand generation team 2 years ago, I think. I'm not going to tell you his name. He's amazing. Sits in England. He brought in a lot of that logic. So some of the things we have done that maybe it's a bit hacky, I don't know if Slack would approve, but we have a Slack community with tens of thousands of people in it and thousands of active users sitting, communicating around Sanity. And one of the challenges is that we don't have full record and it's hard to search inside there. So we took those discussions and we made Q&A pages from them, using a lot of AI to figure out which of those pages would make sense and wrap them in the right way, etc. So there are a lot of situations where you don't necessarily have to generate content. I mean, classification of content and understanding content was there before that. There's still a lot to do.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, there's a zillion applications. I mean, we could be talking about healthcare and picking up cancer and all that sort of stuff. But like, I think the idea that a lot of companies have a lot of information sitting in people's heads and like just in things, files that people don't know about, and surfacing that information and making it easy to access is a pretty good use case of that kind of technology.
It's fantastic. It's a real problem for, I think, most businesses. All this knowledge that is locked. It's the question is, can you aggregate up the relevant information And can you make sure that it isn't hallucinating on you?
Exactly. I was just about to say, can you trust it, right? Like, that's the big thing at the moment, right? Is like, you know, trusting the box,
exactly.
Right?
Yeah. I went to Mexico this Christmas, and it was much cheaper to fly from LA. I live in San Francisco. So we drove down to LA. It was a huge price difference. And I just ChatGPT'd first where to park near LAX.
Yeah, nice.
The cheapest place I wanted to park. It was a bit far. That was okay. And you can't pre-book it. Went down, drove the family late at night, parked the car, went out. And I kind of looked back and it says, pre-booking is much cheaper. And it was like a third of the price. And it cost me hundreds of dollars.
There you go. Bloody GPT.
No, but I think we will see it getting better. On translations in this industry, that has been very costly. I'm really excited to see what people can do with that, because often translation, going into new markets for us, but also for others, documentation, can you make it good enough that people can trust it, that you can see either community-driven initiatives or company-driven initiatives that open it more up? We have a lot of users in India. We're getting interest from Japan. We have had for long-term use in Korea. And of course, a lot of those can look at English docs and are used to that. But we will be able to reach more people, I think, with the way LLMs can really translate, because that they do really, really well compared to what
yeah that have. Yeah, I mean that's a perfect use case for it. I'm going to round it out. Slightly philosophical question: what's your advice for somebody starting up their own startup journey? Any key things that you've learned along the way?
Other than the classic, don't. Because it's so hard.
Maybe that's good. That's good advice. I mean, I actually think that's not bad advice. You know what I reckon? I reckon people don't give enough credence to staying in like a corporate job if that's your like and you like it and work your way up. And like, there's nothing wrong with that. Like, I think
no, 100%.
The idolatry of entrepreneurship. I think it really needs to be questioned, right? Because it's fucking hard.
It is. It is hard. It for me is the best thing I ever did. So I'll take one personal advice afterwards, but I think it's interesting. You've seen Jensen Huang at NVIDIA and others talk about that, right? That if you know what it takes, you won't do it, because you need this unreasonable optimism of being able. And even if you have that unreasonable optimism of being able and this could work, then only X low percent of companies get to a million and 10 million in ARR, and even less people get to 100 million in an IPO their company. But it could still be fun though along the way. I think my advice would be that your odds are so stacked against you that you need to take any opportunity that you can to make it. And to me, that meant taking my family over to San Francisco. I had a lot of people asking, do you really need to do that? There's a lot of capital in Norway. It's a well-functioning capital market, although venture is not as developed. And having been in finance, I had a lot of friends. I knew we took our first round in Norway. But I think it goes for that example as for anything else. Your probability of making it is so low that you really have to focus on getting those odds, improving those odds. And for me, that meant moving over to San Francisco. That is really the center of developer-centric software. I never regretted that. And would we have been where we are without? I don't know. But I think there's a good chance we would have not been where we are without. So I see a lot of Norwegian founders being Norwegian, probably the same for other countries. I mean, England is a better developed startup scene. But when you have a country that has 320 million people in the US, not
that's
only more,
definitely over 350
in the same country speaking the same language and more or less somewhat the same culture, but they also have an affinity for software and understanding that if you buy something that improves your career and your company's ability to make it, you're willing to pay for that. And not this skepticism that I often see in Europe that, is this worth this kind of money? Well, if it improves your business as an ROI calculation for you, and off you go. So I would say it's easier, better market, better system, more people to learn from, but also better market to sell in. So move over here.
Move over to the US. Final question. Where is Sanity in 5 years?
5 years, we are definitely at a place where people would recognize much more than today the difference, and much more think about us as a content operating system than a CMS. I think the term CMS has been changed. I think we'll be part of that. I think content as data is a natural way of thinking about it. And obviously, we're about 150 people now, going towards 200 by the end of the year. So we probably haven't hit 1,000 people yet, maybe. We're at the significantly different stage.
I'll promise to get you back in 2029 and we can we can check your notes. How about that?
I'm happy to do that. Yeah.
I think that's a good way to end the podcast. Thank you so much, Magnus.
Thank you so much for having me.
That's it, folks. Thanks for joining us. Before we go, quick word to our sponsor, Centra, the only commerce platform designed exclusively for fashion brands. If you want to learn more, go visit them at centra.com/yourbasketisempty. And of course, if you like the show, please download, subscribe, and tell all your mates to do the same. We'll see you next time.